like what has made us compatible in business is also good in our marriage, where like the things that I'm naturally inclined to do are to see what needs to get done and to kind of list it out and start attacking it. Whereas he, I think he's more intuitive than I am. Like he will just kind of be walking around and be like, oh, there's a mess here, and he'll clean it up. Whereas I'm
amen for that.
You know, I'm like, no, we're scheduling a cleaning day on Saturday. Like, why are you
Mom.
Yes, what?
Slow down.
Sound familiar?
I get it. Mom life is demanding. There are no off hours, the pay is minimal, and your bosses are relentless. But there is a way that you could start giving back to the most important person in your life, you. As a mom of four, I get what it's like, but I promise you can start to enjoy life more, take time for yourself, and cultivate a sense of inner peace that all your friends will notice. My name is Jessica, and I'm the host of the Mom Slowdown podcast, where we will tackle topics important to us moms, discover the clues to healing and happiness, and take time just for us. Thank you for joining me on this journey to a happier, healthier, more satisfied version of you. Looking for even more joy? Check out my membership site at jessicanicole.love. Indulge in a yoga class, sip on a glass of Cabernet, or challenge your skills in the kitchen. But remember, Mom, slow down. This podcast is sponsored by the app, The Zen Mommy, my latest wellness offering just for moms like you. I am so thrilled to talk about my new app, where I share all the wellness tools that I use in my life. Check out the library of yoga, recovery, meditation, and strength classes, kitchen tips, and a recipe database of personally curated recipes to help you look and feel your best. Plus, check out the journal features, where you can cultivate a daily gratitude practice, and so much more. Life is stressful, but I believe we can make it all it is meant to be with just a few tools to help us along the way. Download the Zen Mommy now at Apple and Google Play and start creating a life you want. Andrea Hamoya is a self-proclaimed okay mom, but what I saw in her were superhuman qualities any mom would be jealous of. She has grown a family, a marriage, and a cider business that is changing the beverage industry, one flirty, delicious can at a time. And yep, all while navigating a tricky working relationship with her husband of 7 years. Learn from Andrea the firsthand do's and don'ts of working with your spouse and what has made Ash and Elm a successful partnership in cider and in love.
So tell me about Ash and Elm Cider. You guys have been in business for about 5 years. What was the path that got you to opening a cider company in the Midwest?
My husband and I met and had, he's kind of like an ideas guy. So he was constantly just spitballing like, oh, you know what we should do? We should open a grilled cheese food truck, or we should open a smash burger place. And he had all of these ideas, and, you know, they ranged from food and beverage, that's kind of our personal interest, to like tangential to food and beverage. And, you know, as we were dating, it was kind of like an appealing thing about him that he always had these ideas and these big plans. But the longer we were together, the more I was like, we were just talking about it and never doing any of it. And I'm much more of like decide what you want to do and then go do it. And so I think the more comfortable we got with each other and the more he talked about it, I would then take those conversations and go and like start researching things. And I'd come back to him a few weeks later and be like, okay, so I think this idea is actually really good. And he'd be like, oh no, I don't want to do that anymore. And it was like this cycle of constantly getting excited about these opportunities and then having him be like, no, that was just a dumb idea I had. And me being like, well, I was kind of into it. So finally I kind of gave him a hard, like, you either have to stop talking to me about these ideas you have, or you have to actively pursue one, because, or two, like narrow it down and focus, or don't tell me about it, because I'm like going on this roller coaster of excitement and then sadness and then excitement and then sadness. And so yeah, we went on a vacation. He had always made beer since I knew him. He went to grad school at Stanford in the early 2000s, and craft beer was kind of really hot then there. And it hadn't really reached Indiana yet. So he had been kind of an early microbrewer adopter. And then as time passed, he started making wine and then making cider. And then we went to Europe and had some of the ciders that, you know, are kind of the more traditional dry style, and realized that it was a beverage that could be so much more than we had thought it could be. So yeah, we went on a vacation. I made him create a list of like, what are your skills? What are your interests? Where's the opportunity? And then I made the same list. And then we like, okay, so you are interested in hop farming, but you have no skills in farming. So like, let's just cross that right off the list. And we kind of went through this, like a manipulative or whatever, this program, and narrowed it down and decided like cider was really interesting to us as a beverage. No one here was really doing it. And a lot of the skills he'd already learned from brewing beer for so long would transfer really easily. So it felt like this kind of trifecta of skills and interests and values. That's a really long answer. But
how long have you guys been married?
We've been married for 9 years now, almost. Okay. 9 years.
Yep. So you're the locomotive behind this idea engine.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I'm the kind of risk taker. Like, what's the worst that could happen? It fails. Okay. So what? And he's the like, oh, I don't know. So,
which it has to be challenging. I mean, working together, when you think about the financials of a home and a husband and wife being together, all your eggs are in one basket. Is that, you know, being the risk taker is like, was that challenging, especially when starting a family? And
he actually kept his job up until recently. So the whole time it's been just me officially leading the company while he's kept his day job. So I didn't pay myself for the first three and a half years. We lived off of his income. I got the business to a point where it could start paying me. And now it's at a point where it pays me and can start paying him too. So he's just gone part-time. He went to quit, but they were like, please stay part-time. So
and what is his day job?
He's an electrical engineer.
Okay.
At Cummins down in Columbus.
That's cool. Well, I've got two of your amazing ciders. It's for anybody watching this, it could be 5 o'clock somewhere, but it's really 11 o'clock here in Indiana. And they're incredible. I mean, I have to say, I've never tasted cider. It's not like a beer at all.
No, it's not. It's a wine legally.
Is it? Okay. What's the alcohol content of a cider?
The two you had there, almost all of them are 6.5%, but okay. The pineapple one you have is the only one that we add water to make it a much lighter cider. Mm-hmm. So that's only 3.5%. So that's kind of the one that we imagine people like mowing the yard in the hot, hot summer and needing.
Yeah, they're kind of like adult juice boxes. I mean, they're really good.
Glad you like them.
So tell me about the process of making cider. You know, you said it's classified as like, would it be even a sparkling wine or just in the wine category?
Okay. No, it's in the wine category. Cider is kind of an interesting beverage where if you add carbonation, like it's just right in between beer and wine in a lot of the process and how you make it and how it's priced and its alcohol content and how it's perceived. It is legally, I think, everywhere a wine because there's no brewing involved. You don't cook anything. You don't boil water with grains. There's no grain in it. So like wine, you just get apple juice and add yeast and let it ferment. And then you finish it however you like. We take the juice and we ferment it all the same. And then we finish each batch differently. We'll add raspberries for fleeting youth or add different levels of sugars back or no sugar back. And that'll kind of turn them into the different styles we have.
Yeah, I love the names too. What the fleeting youth? That's great. Yeah. Super creative. All right. So with the packaging, I feel like it feels kind of feminine and sexy. Are you going after women with the demographics, or is it kind of all over the board? What's the age range of your clientele?
Mm-hmm. So back when we were in the planning stages of this, we got a data point that informed a lot of our decision making, which is. Beer is about 70% male consumers and 30% female, and cider is about 50-50. So even though nationally at that point it was half and half, it felt so much more like so many more women were drinking because just how it's different than beer. Also, I had worked in some breweries and we had visited a lot of breweries throughout the years. And there were so many times I walked in somewhere and just kind of looked around at the aesthetic choices. And I was like, they didn't expect a woman. They were wanting men to come here. They're targeting themselves at men. And it goes from just like black aggressive branding all the way to like sexist naming conventions in beer. And so as a woman-owned company, we were like, well, we're certainly not going to be doing that. But then we also wanted to make a brand that felt open to all in a way that was just by being not actively masculine, I feel like things feel feminine. And so our branding, yeah, it was very intentional. We wanted everything about our brand and our space and the words we use and our social media presence to be not something that anyone could come in and be like, they didn't expect me to walk in the door today. So hopefully, I mean, well, I kind of don't care if men walk in and they're like, oh, it's too girly, because that's their problem. But yeah, it was super intentional to be a blank canvas for people to kind of project upon instead of.
I love that. Yeah. And what's your role in the company? Is it developed and kind of, you said, you know, you were basically running it for 3 years. Now your husband's more involved. You know, what's your everyday?
Yeah. With the company, I do still run the show. I kind of oversee everything as we've grown. Like, it started and I was like, oh, I'll kind of help out in the tasting room when we need a bartender. And then I'll go do payroll in the background, and then I'll update our website. And I'm still doing all of those things, but we have a much bigger team. So it's more of like delegating and managing our team. I'm the owner. Aaron is technically not an owner. So, you know, and he appreciates that about me. And I'm much more of like a natural leader than he is anyway, I think. So, you know, when he's in the company more, I'm like, Aaron, I need you to do this. And, you know, he has his area, but I have my hand in everything. And we're just getting to the point that we're large enough that I'm starting to kind of not be able to do anything anymore, both capacity wise and also knowledge wise. Like, I know enough about accounting and QuickBooks and HR to get to handle a few employees and a few vendors, but to have, you know, the size of company we are, like, I'm bumping up against my skills. So we're starting to have to hire out some of the stuff.
Which is good, right? So it's hard to let go of control, but that means that you're growing, you know, and there are certain people that have skill sets, and it's always nice to be able to bring in professionals. I was always taught, you know, surround yourself with people smarter than you and pay them
Absolutely.
Really well.
Yep. That's kind of what we're trying to go for.
Yeah. So the dynamics, I mean, marriage is so hard anyway, right? So I've been married 14 years. That in and of itself is like so challenging, just learning to cohabitate with another person, especially the opposite sex that thinks differently, feels differently, emotion handles stress differently. How have you made it work as a husband, wife, now that he's in full time? It's probably easier when he was little, when he was still going to a day job. Yeah. I mean, that has to be so challenging for you guys.
It is. I think, I mean, to be totally frank, sometimes I feel like we fall into the business partner side of things more than life partners more often than we should. And we need to make sure that we keep focusing on our marriage. Having kids, I think that's a lot of things. That's having two young kids.
And how old are your kids? They're young, right?
Like 9 months and 3.5
years. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, we're in the thick of it when already you're like, I need you to do this. And he's like, I need you to do this. So like, we're already at that point. And then like, throw in a pandemic and a small business and all of these things. Like, I think the last year has been tough for us to be able to do any, just like, let's do some fun stuff together and remember why we have a great time together. So yeah, I don't think we have it all figured out, but I think we've kind of learned to try to keep work stuff at work, or at least like not when our kids are awake and they're home with us, because they're in daycare and preschool. But like, we don't talk about work at dinner. We don't, you know, after they go to bed, we usually like get a glass of wine or beer or whatever and
or cider.
Yeah. And enjoy each other's company. And then we try to not work at all on Sunday. Saturdays, just given the industry, we often have to do something. But yeah, we have to be pretty intentional about it. And I think honestly, having a baby made us really start separating work from personal, because before it was like, yeah, we'll work all the time and it doesn't matter. And now we're like, we can't. We have to pick up our kids from daycare and they're in bed at 7. And so we're home. So I think that's helped a little bit.
Which is nice. I mean, it sounds like you have, whether they're written or unwritten, some clear boundaries, you know, Sunday's a boundary, you know, being present with the kids, you know, which is harder said than done, especially, you know, when you're running your own business. I mean, it's 100% all the time, 7 days a week, 365. Yeah. And it's going through your mind. With your roles, are they different than the ones at the office? Do you come and then share expectations? Are you kind of still running the show when you get home? How does that work out?
I think a lot of this is our personalities. I'm kind of like what you said earlier on, where I want to communicate things. If I'm not happy, I want to tell you so that you have the information. And he's much more of a like, let it go, try to let it go for a lot. If he's irritated, he won't immediately be like, hey, I didn't like that the way I will. And so I think because of that, sometimes, you know, that's just a marriage thing we've had to figure out that like, I'll say it. Sometimes he'll feel like I'm too aggressive with that kind of stuff. Whereas I feel like, why are you letting me annoy you and not telling me that what I'm doing is annoying you? Like, just
it's the constant pursuer retreater, which is the dynamics in my marriage. I'm like, let's talk about it. Here's all the things that I'm disappointed in. Let me count the ways. And he's like, silence.
And he's like, wow, you must really be irritated with me all the time. And I'm like, no. It's just like the last 10 minutes. I'm just telling you.
Right. Yeah. Versus just, you know, and that's the, it's, you know, men voted off their emotional island, you know, many, many years ago, and they need to vote it back on in today's present age. And it's just a hard way to communicate, you know, for them to even access. My poor husband used to walk around with a sheet of paper with smiley faces that said, I'm happy, sad, frustrated. I mean, we did a deep dive into relearning emotions because he just had no idea. And I was like, well, how are you feeling? I don't know. Like, what? I feel, you know, here's the different layers of how I feel. And it's hard because you're having to probably challenge the roles of during the day, you're a superwoman here running, you know, Ash Nauman, you're, you know, you're doing the boss thing and bossing him around and then having to kind of switch focus and, and be like co-parenting and being together as an equal partnership. I imagine that presents, it's hard to flip the switch off, I imagine, on and off.
Yeah, it totally is. And like what has made us compatible in business is also good in our marriage, where like the things that I'm naturally inclined to do are to see what needs to get done and to kind of list it out and start attacking it. Whereas I think he's more intuitive than I am. Like he will just kind of be walking around and be like, oh, there's a mess here, and he'll clean it up. Whereas I'm
amen for that.
You know, I'm like, no, we're scheduling a cleaning day on Saturday. Like, why are you spending your time on this when I'm trying to make dinner? He's like, I don't know. Like, there's a mess. I'm trying to help. So yeah, I know. I think in our home life, he's much more of a, like a nurturing person. Mm-hmm. And I'm much more of like a task oriented.
Yeah. I can understand that. Yeah. Would you recommend it? So there's a lot of small businesses that started. I mean, I think there were more permits for businesses and things over the pandemic, because a lot of people were faced in circumstances where their regular 9-to-5 or whatever it was, you know, no longer existed. And so I think there are more people entering the workforce, entering into small businesses as a couple, as teams. Mm-hmm. Would you recommend it? Would you do it again?
I think I would do it again, but I would really caution people to think carefully about your dynamic, because if you don't have the kind of, we're both really analytical and not super emotional. And so we can have disagreements with each other. We're coming from the total opposite side, and we can do that without getting our feelings hurt. And I think that that is kind of key. You want to be able to have someone that you can have those kinds of conversations with and not have it linger. So I think that's, if you don't have that, I wouldn't recommend it, because I think it's just like when you have kids, suddenly there are so many more things to get frustrated by, but also pleased by. And so I think you're just opening up a whole new world of potential conflicts and potential ways to like to celebrate each other. And so it kind of depends on your dynamic.
Yeah, I think that's good. Yeah. And communication and open lines, taking emotion out of the stuff that doesn't deserve emotion. I mean,
I mean,
even though it's emotional and you, I imagine it was your first baby, this business. And then you decided in the midst of all this to have two more. Was that a tough decision?
It's kind of a funny story. So like, I wasn't sure I wanted to be a mom. And I think we both were kind of like, maybe, I don't know. And then for like a couple months, I was like, yeah, let's do it. And I didn't get pregnant. And so then I was like, I probably can't get pregnant. So like, I'm not even going to worry about it, but that's okay with me. And then the next month I was pregnant. So I was kind of like, even though a few months ago, emotionally, I felt like, yeah, let's have a kid. When I found out I was pregnant a few months later, I was like, oh no, like, I don't want to have kids. And so I went through a pretty, like my first pregnancy, I was pretty depressed. And I think I had a really hard time reconciling what I see in society about who moms are and what moms should be like with who I am. And I felt like, and not just as just like temperamentally, I'm not, like I said, I'm not super nurturing. I'm not super emotional, kind of task oriented. And so it felt like like I would have to really come to terms with a new persona, and I didn't want to have to. And then just from the business side of it, I was very much like, we're staying here till 11 every night. We're coming home and like our house is a mess. We don't have laundry. We don't have groceries. We cannot bring a child into this thing. And so that's kind of what made us step back and start to kind of put some boundaries with the business. So it was good. But yeah, it wasn't necessarily like 9 months into this small business, let's get pregnant and have a kid. The second one, of course, you know, you've had one, you're like, oh, he's great. Let's do another. So
that's why they're cute when they're little. And yes, they're not born teenagers.
Yeah, he was definitely planned, but I was like 3 months pregnant when the pandemic started. So, you know, in retrospect, would I have had him a year earlier or a year later? Maybe. But he's great. So right. He's like a super easy baby.
Were you able to find, you know, it's such a shame, I think, that society places this kind of picture. And that's one of the things in the podcast and just in life, like I want to reframe what a good mom looks like, because it looks like so many different things. Have you been able to kind of carve out your own mom persona that works for you, kind of outside of the boundaries and restrictions that society places on us?
I'm pretty self-deprecating. And so I often will say to other people or moms or even myself, like, oh, I'm not a good mom, but I don't care if I am not. I'm okay with being like, just okay. I don't have to be a great mom. I can be just an okay mom.
But maybe you are a great mom, right? So that's,
yeah, maybe.
Yeah. I think all moms are great. We're all just trying to do the best we can.
Yeah. And I think one thing that I think is good about me is that I'm not a perfectionist, especially when it comes to motherhood. And I think that that's one of the societal things that stress me out, like the Pinterest birthdays and all of these, like making cupcakes.
Just delete Pinterest.
Yeah. Like all of that was like, that's not who I am. And it's not who I would ever be, even if I could choose to be. So I think I've gotten rid of that. I think also when I was pregnant with my firstborn early on, when I was kind of in that emotional turmoil, I remember being at our church and looking around and seeing all of these women who had kids. And I was like, she is a stay-at-home mom. She's a stay-at-home mom. She's a stay-at-home mom. She's a stay-at-home mom. And just feeling like, is there anyone here that like chose to work, or are they all like so glad that they had kids so that they could leave the workforce and be a mom? Cause I will never want to do that. And so I think that was part of it too. And so for that, I think talking to some of the friends that I have that are women that are like badass job, like at their work, was really helpful. And being like, no, that's just this one segment of my life. And I was wrong anyway. I was in that space. So that's all I was seeing. But like, no, it's not only stay-at-home moms there. And also I have these friends who are great moms who are like even not even better, but who are like the top of their fields. So,
and surrounding yourself with like-minded people and support, I think is super important.
Yeah.
Having a good support system. Let's get back to cider. All right. So it's a super tasty beverage. Is it paired with food? Do you have recommendations? Is it summertime? Do you drink something different in the winter than you would in the summer?
Yeah. So cider is a pretty, just for sales, it's a pretty seasonal beverage. It really picks up when the weather starts to warm up in like April or May. That's when we start to see our sales bump. And then it stays pretty high throughout the summer. And then the fall, it goes even higher before it kind of falls off for winter. So there is kind of a seasonal calendar to it, because it's so refreshing and light. So it's great for the summer. And also because people associate cider with the fall. So I think one thing we're always trying to figure out, and also I think other people in the cider industry are trying to figure out, is how do you make a heavier cider that kind of goes with winter vibes? Like how do you make it feel warming? So that's one thing. And we have some good ciders in the winter, but yeah. And then Yeah. One of the things we love, like Aaron and I are really into food and cooking, and we're opening a new restaurant with the cidery in the next month. So we're like,
congratulations. Really, yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah. So we're really in the thick of it right now. And one thing that we always were kind of like really cared about was making sure people knew how great cider is with food. Like people automatically associate wine with certain food, like a big red wine, you're like, oh, steak, and a light white wine, oh, fish, you know, you have those associations, and same with beer, but people don't know that with cider. But cider is great. It's great because it has kind of the acidity that you need in a beverage pairing to kind of cut through flavors. Mm-hmm. So I think cider is great with like any sort of fatty or creamy something like cheese or
like even creamy pastas. I could see
creamy pastas.
Just to get that little bit of it's not bitterness, but that bite that would kind of cut through that acidity.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And then it also, because cider can be sweeter, it's great with like barbecue or some of those more summery flavor forward things like Asian food. Cider again can kind of cut through it, or Mexican food. So
especially with that spice, that balance and the sweet and the spicy. Yeah. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically anything that white wine could pair with, cider automatically will pair with, like fish, like olives, briny stuff. I think cider is great with, but because cider is kind of, it's kind of a template that you can add other flavors to, and you can adjust the sweetness and the flavors, and you can have ciders with herbs in them, like a basil cider, which we've made before. You could have cider with fruit. We do a ton of fruit ciders. You can have cider with spices. Like our fall cider is a pumpkin spice cider that has like cinnamon and clove and star anise and all of that. So you can really, it's kind of a great conduit for flavor. And because of that, it can pair with almost anything.
Yeah, I could see even making some really good sauces with it. Do you cook with it often?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. We make like cider glazes or a cider compote. Like if we're making like a fruit compote, we'll cook it down in some of our ciders. So yeah, you can do all sorts of great stuff with cider and cooking, just like wine.
Yeah, no, I love it.
So we're actually just moving, instead of opening a second tasting room or something, we're just moving our whole spot to a new restaurant, and it's going to be much bigger. It's going to be more what we would have done originally if we had known things were going to go well. So full service restaurant, I think 95 seats plus a patio, full kitchen. We hired a chef. Yeah. So
what type of food are you serving?
I would call it New American. Asked her, I was like, what would you call this? She was like, I guess New American. You know, the 5 years we've been open, we had a really small kitchen. And so we had mostly like sandwiches and salads and soups and nothing, like no entree type deals. So we're adding all of that on, but we don't want to alienate the customers that have been our fans for 5 years. So we're keeping a lot of that kind of lighter sandwichy stuff, but adding on a layer of chef skill and entrees and appetizers. And yeah, so it's going to like some of that we're working on the menu right now. There will be several vegan, and almost everything will be gluten-free because cider is naturally gluten-free. So we have a lot of our fans don't eat gluten. So we want to make sure to reach them, and then just like tasty, well-prepared, flavorful, seasonal, local ingredients, everything made from scratch. I'm pretty excited about it.
That's exciting. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So are you already in restaurants with your cider? Do you see cider coming on to restaurant menus? They've got beer and wine, and cider as another category.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's going to take a while for the restaurant industry. Like it always kind of irks me when I drive by a restaurant and they have kind of the little marquee at the top that's like beer, craft beer, wine, cocktails. I'm like, add cider. It's its own category, but I don't think people really see it that way yet. It's still, I want to say it's like 10% of beer sales go towards cider. So it's still pretty small, but yeah, it should be a category. I think every restaurant should at least have one, and it should be ours.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it, especially with, you know, what you're talking about and pairing with foods and giving another option, you know, and I've had a issue with drinking wine, especially conventional wine, because of toxins and additives and things that are in it, and having another option, especially since I don't like beer. I mean, I can't speak for everyone, but this is a great option to be out, not having you know, you don't want a vodka soda at, you know, on a Tuesday. Right. You know, for the most part at 5 o'clock, but this is a nice option, you know, with a lower alcohol content that, you know, could still pair nicely with food that I think a lot of people would really enjoy.
Yeah. It's interesting. Some of our biggest accounts are breweries, local breweries in town, because, you know, I think they all kind of compete with each other, you know, Daredevil and Sun King and Taxman. They're not going to carry each other's beer, but they'll all carry our cider because there isn't another option for them to have as a cider option that's local besides us. So if you look at our list of accounts and the sales by account, like the top, there are like 30 breweries on there. Almost every brewery in the state, if they carry something that's not beer, is our cider. And they sell through a lot of it because not everyone that goes to a brewery, if they're going for, you know, friends are going and they want to see their friends, or if it's a brew pub and they want to eat, you know, they all need something. And that ends up being us.
So, yeah, no, I think it's a great option. All right. So question, what's the worst experience you've had so far working with your spouse? What's the hardest one that you guys have gotten through?
So there's the day-to-day, just like we see things differently and we both have to kind of convince each other that we have that our idea is the right one to pursue. That happens all the time though. I think the most difficult experience we had was, so we had an employee who was kind of a key employee. She had been with us for a few years and she was experiencing a lot in her personal life and came to me and she was like, I need a raise. Like I'm struggling. She had a roommate and they fell out. So her expenses had gone up and she was just like, you know, I've been with you guys. I work really hard. I need more. And she was making more than most of our employees already. And it was when I wasn't getting paid too. And so part of it was like, I don't want to say I rolled my eyes at it, but it was like, it was a big ask. And we were at a place where we weren't even financially, I think we weren't making a profit. And so I went to Erin and I was like, so this came up. She wants a raise. She wants like this much. And I know it's steep, but like, I'll just keep not paying myself for a little bit longer and we can do it because she's so loyal and she's done a great job. And he was like, just like, we can't do that. We are not in a place where we can add anything that doesn't have to be added. And so he and I went back and forth on it for a while. She had told me and I said, we would think about it. And then, you know, she came to me again and said like, I need this. And so finally I kind of convinced Erin to give her promotion and give her a commission based on sales. So I was like, hey, this is great. Cause if she does this and she kind of attacks it, she'll be able to get that money that she wants. So we offered it to her and she quit. And she was just like, no, I need this now. And I think that was the hardest thing. It wasn't even a conflict between me and him, but it was just like, he wasn't working there at the time. He didn't know how much value she brought. He didn't know how much I needed her. And we were talking about, you know, a couple thousand dollars in a year is month to month, a few hundred dollars. And I was trying to say like, this is not that much, like this is the right thing to do for her. And she quit. And I told him like, and she quit sadly, you know, yeah. And she was hurt. And
did you have like, resentment? Is it hard to come back from that?
With him?
Yeah.
Maybe for a little bit I did. I think it's more like if it comes up again, I'm like, you better let me do this. And he's like, I get that you want our employees to make enough money to like have a good life. But at the same time, if we go out of business,
nobody's getting paid.
Yeah. So we have that conflict where I see how hard people are working for our dream. And I want to give them everything. And he's like, you can't do that. So it is like an ongoing thing. But the couple times since then where someone has come and said, like, I would like a raise or whatever, I think I immediately go to this place of like, oh no, like Erin and I are going to have a fight and we're going to have to say no. And he's changed a little bit. One, our business is in a better place now. And
does it help that he's there more and is seeing the day to day? Because it's hard to make decisions about a company that you're not in all the time.
Yeah.
Especially since you were there full time.
Yeah. Maybe that's part of it. I think that's probably part of it. And, you know, he hears the times or reads the reviews when things don't go well. And so he's like, I don't even think they're doing that good of a job anyway. And I'm like, you were wrong. Like that was one review out of 100 happy experiences that didn't leave a review. You can't just say like, well, I think they're actually not doing a good job. So yeah, it's
where do you see yourself or the both of you in the company in 5 years? What's the trajectory? What's the plan?
So company-wise, we are hoping to launch in grocery stores this fall. We've gotten word that we will be in grocery stores, but until I see it with my eyes, I don't want to be like, we made it into Kroger. So so that's a little like, we should be in Kroger unless something falls apart this fall. So grocery store, we want to expand to be a regional brand. So we are close to being in Kentucky and then Ohio, Illinois. I can see us growing into those states, getting the restaurant.
Will you do like grassroots kind of initiative like you did farmers markets? You said that was so successful. Do you see yourself expanding to that throughout the Midwest? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I see all of that. I think we would love it to get to the point where we can take vacations as a family.
Yeah. Oh like, my gosh. Yeah.
Really enjoy our family because, you know, now that we do have kids, I grew up overseas and he traveled a lot internationally. And so I value so much like being exposed to other cultures when you're small and seeing like not everything is the way it is here. And so I think like in 5 years, I would love it if we've maybe hired a president who can handle the day-to-day and he and I are still actively involved, but we're not like pulling the long hours that we are now. I mean, it's what every business person wants. You want it to get to a point where it kind of runs itself well so that you can like work hard when you're working and be gone for a month and not have everything fall apart. Yeah.
Sure. That's our goal. Yeah. Which is important. And especially when both, you know, are there all the time to find that balance of like, how do we dedicate time for family when we have this whole other baby, basically another child over here that you're nurturing and fostering and growing and teaching. And
you can't just leave your kid and expect them to teach themselves.
Right. Both kids, real ones and the business one.
Right. That was the business one.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So where can they find, where if people are interested, can they find more about you and the company and...
Yeah. So our website is www.ashandelmcider.com. We're at a bunch of local farmers markets, Carmel, Fishers, Westfield, Broad Ripple, Bloomington, Fort Wayne. We're on social media. That's the best way to find out kind of up-to-date stuff that's going on. And then the other thing is we did launch at the beginning of the pandemic, we launched a cider subscription service. And so we actually direct mail cider to people's homes, which is another thing that wineries are allowed to do.
And can you do that across the country? That's great. So anybody listening, if they want to try the cider, they can sign up for the subscription service and get it shipped directly to them. That's awesome. Okay. Yep.
We ship to 37 states. We started online shipping during the pandemic and then launched the subscription service in December. And my goal was to have 250 subscribers around the US because that was kind of like these established cideries that were doing online clubs, that's around where they were. And we're at like 450 members.
Oh, that's big. That congratulations. That's exciting. Yeah, how does this subscription work? Is it every 3 months? Is it every month?
Yep. It's quarterly. And it's actually like one of the best ideas I had as a business for marketing was doing a cider of the month. We've done that since we opened. And so every month we have a new cider that comes out and it's become kind of what our regular fans like get excited about because each month there's something brand new and it started really small and it's grown over time. And our subscription service is every quarter you get the three ciders of the month that came out that quarter plus the seasonal for that quarter. So you get four different ciders. And then depending on the level you sign up for, you can either add on whatever you want to add, like get some cases of our regular stuff. And I think that sets us apart amongst cideries around the states that we have these 12 ciders that are unique every year. So we have a lot of people in these really great cider states like Washington and Oregon who have a bunch of cider options that still are like, I got to get Ash and Elm's 12 ciders. So it's really gratifying. And I think it's what's putting us on the map in the cider world, not just in the Indianapolis beverage world.
Have you had any ciders of the month that were big flops, combinations that just didn't work, or they've all been pretty tasty?
I don't think we've ever put out a cider that we think is bad. We learned early on, though, that how we describe them really matters, because we had one in our first year that we were modeling it after a popular beer style, and we called it Coriander Hef. And like, we thought it was one of the best, like it was so good. But no one tried it. They were like, I'm not getting that. I don't even know what that is. And so we learned to be very simple with our naming and like highlight the most appealing parts of it. So like instead of Coriander Hef, we should have called it like, I don't even know. But yeah, so the ciders themselves have all been good. How they sell is kind of directly related to how they're named. And I know our customers now, so I can tell you, looking at the year's thing, like which ones are going to be bangers and which ones are going to be more moderate sales. So I'm trying to make them all bangers.
That's awesome. Well, and we live and learn, right? That's how we grow.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Andrea, for your time. I'm so excited for this Ash and Elm cider. It really is very tasty. So, and the opening of the new restaurant. Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you. There's a lot going on and we're excited about it and a little bit scared, but it'll be fine.
That's good. It's good. It means you still care. They say that when I teach yoga, if you're still a little nervous, that means you still care.
I like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I still care.
Yeah. Thank you so very much.